Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The last time, the only time the Super Bowl was there was the Redskins bandwagon year. That's I remember right. everything about that.
Were you involved in that at all?
I remember the ice sculpture. I remember the, what are those, snowboard? What are those things that you...
Snowmobiles.
You can't remember.
Snowboards.
I drove the snowmobiles.
You talk about them like they're something from Star Wars.
It was my first and only time.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We're live at Chatter. Where breakfast starts at 7 in the morning on days that we're open, which I will get to in a second. Howard Fineman is here. Tori Clark is here. Nigel's running the board. Michael Kornheiser in the seventh day of a trial that was supposed to last a day and a half. Michael Kornheiser, don't call him.
He's angry.
This is good that he's doing his civic duty.
Absolutely. You want that experience, but 7 days, he's pretty steamed on that. So today is an odd show for me. There really is a lot to talk about in the world of sports, particularly in the Washington, D.C. area, with the quarterbacks changing, with Alex Smith coming in and Kirk Cousins clearly leaving. And normally I would lead with that and talk about that at great length. I had a deer experience this morning, D-E-E-R. I had the moon experience this morning, and I would talk at great length. But we can't do that. We're going to start with the State of the Union, because that's the money today, is the State of the Union. But first, I have to explain. People, like, there's some guys here from out of town. Somebody's here from Denver. Somebody went to Harper College is here.
How about
makes
that?
Me very, very
Back
happy.
When it was still Harper College?
I went to Colgate and I went to Harper.
He's got the Harper shirt on right there.
Yeah, so that's nice. We're going to be closed next Tuesday at least, and probably next Wednesday. We are redoing, finally, the men's bathroom. We have to close the entire shop for 2 days. We will be open Monday, the day after the Super Bowl, and I'm sure we'll be open Thursday and maybe Wednesday. But if you're planning, if you're in the area and you're planning, no, don't come in Tuesday for sure. Don't even come in on Wednesday. We'll live without you. But come for the Super Bowl, because we have Super Bowl parties.
That's right.
We have Super Bowl parties. We have Super Bowl giveaways. We have contests. We have, I mean, ultimately, I think you can win a camel. I think the camel that Tori stole.
Yes.
I think you can win a camel. And we'll get to all that stuff. Now we have to get last night. So I'm home. And I want to watch some of, not all of, I want to watch some of the State of the Union. I noticed Trump in a blue tie. I always like to see what color tie he has. He very rarely wears anything but a solid color tie, but mostly wears red. But the blue looked fine. I watched him come in. I watched all the people, you know, they said there's this one and there's that one. And I listened for a little while, and then I said, okay, I'm done now. I was about 10 minutes in, and I was done. That's why, because I said to myself, Howard and Tori are going to be here, and they can analyze this. The first thing that, now, I didn't know this, and I'm sort of glad I left. An hour and 20. An
third,
hour and
third
20.
Longest.
That is a, you know, that's like playing golf with J.B. Holmes, who should be banned from the tour, because he's unbelievably slow. An hour and 20 is a long time. President Trump did not write a word of his speech. He was reading it, so you know he didn't write it. So we'll start with the obvious question, Howard. Where are we? How was it?
Where are we? We are in Donald Trump's world, as he sees it from his point of view, a very,
positive.
I think, confident, politically confident person last night. Thinking, you know, I got my tax bill, I got my economy, I got the ISIS thing, I got a lot. He's a salesman, and he said to himself, I got a lot to sell here, and I'm going to take my time selling it. So one reason that the speech was so long is that he spent a good half hour basically crowing and using it as a political advertisement, which as president he's entitled to do.
I know I would do it.
And he took full,
I was up there.
And he took full advantage of it.
Yeah.
The second thing he did, he actually practiced this speech a lot, and the reason he practiced it a lot is that they layered it with a whole lot of people and a whole lot of personal stories. Lots of them. You missed most of it because
you know
you,
what?
Yeah.
You know, I recall in my adult lifetime when it started being televised, And every once in a while, a president, you go back, I'm sure, to Bill Clinton, maybe to Ronald Reagan.
I believe it started with Lenny Skutnik.
Yes.
And that was Air Florida.
Yeah, that was the first one.
1981.
So that's Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan started this.
And I saw that, and I said, wow.
Well, now it's...
There's an actual human being in there who's not elected, and there's a story... And so now you take full advantage of the camera time.
And they did that, and that was...
And they all do
that. That was the most fulsome use of that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I kept trying to find a count, because about halfway through I went, oh my gosh, I've never seen this many people.
A lot of people.
And they also, and Tori...
And him wrapping himself up in their reflected empathy and glory.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable.
That's
dozens. So, yeah, literally dozens.
And they used to just do it at the beginning. It used to be kind of a ritual thing at the beginning.
And then you went on to the
hero,
speech.
Lenny Skutnik, we got that out of the way, let's do it. But what these people did, and I think it's brilliant, really, is that they made it, in a way, the theme of the whole speech. And they went all the way through. He was still introducing people at the end. And so, I think Tori's absolutely right.
Did I forget Cousin Sadie? Cousin Sadie!
Come on down.
A great dinner.
But they all had very sharp political points to be made. For example, they had two couples, African-American or Hispanic-American, but dark-skinned, husbands and wives, who had lost...
Children
to... attacks by the MS-13 gang.
Yeah.
And basically Donald Trump's pitch on immigration is, we need to change everything because we have to keep MS-13 out of the country. We have to keep the murdering gangs out of the country. That's why you need to vote for my immigration law. So that was toward the end of the speech. He used that then. So that's the other reason why it was so long. And this notion of bipartisanship, I thought it was interesting. He met with the network correspondents earlier in the day.
Said, which they always do.
Yeah, and say, I'm going to give a really bipartisan speech. That was the velvet glove and the iron fist, that speech.
Was it not
politically,
bipartisan?
Not really. It was bipartisan in the sense, basically he was saying, hey, if you want to do a deal here, come with me. Do it my way, basically. Now, he's going to claim that he wants to allow... 1.8 million people who were here illegally to ultimately become citizens.
These are the Dreamers?
The Dreamers plus after 12 years or so. But all the rest of it is very, very, very hard.
So, Tori, in your political life, you were an advisor and a consultant and a press representative and all of that. When you see Trump do a speech like this, do you say, oh, pretty smart, pretty good?
Sort of. And I say sort of because the context for me is that I've thought for years and years and years they're not relevant, right? And it was always frustrating being in government, being in administration, the amount of time and energy that gets spent on preparing for State of the Unions, which are just laundry lists, right?
Right.
Like in your careers living and working here in Washington, how many State of the Unions do you really remember, right? How many lines from State of the Unions, and or what impact did they have on the following year? Not much, right? But as a laundry list goes, he checked all the boxes. I thought from a production standpoint, Nigel and I were talking about this before the show, what was brilliant is they usually don't reveal who's the president going to acknowledge in the box with the first lady because it's a big surprise, right? They revealed a bunch of them. So in the days and hours leading up to the State of the Union and since the State of the Union, those people that were featured in the box, the police officer who adopted the baby of the drug addict, right?
Right.
He was being interviewed. He was being seen at the White House saying nice, wonderful things about Donald Trump. It may only be 24 hours, but Donald Trump wrapped himself up in all the warm and fuzzies of all of these people he recognized. So from a television production standpoint, that was brilliant.
I've seen him make campaign speeches. And they're, you know, I mean... They ramble a little bit. He loses track and comes back to everything is great all the time. He doesn't seem like a long-form great speechmaker in the way that Barack Obama was a long-form great speechmaker. Bill Clinton, yeah. Were you what impressed you, Howard, and what confused you?
Well, what impressed me was his political confidence. And personal confidence, which I wrote about yesterday for NBCNews.com. Mm-hmm. My new plug, baby.
Well, why not? Yourself.
Why not? I don't have a podcast, but, you know,
yeah.
I'm headed toward Jason Lockenfora land.
Yeah.
His political confidence and the fact that people thought he would be truly bipartisan, when he obviously had no intention of doing that. It's bipartisan in the sense that I'm in charge here. You're perfectly free to agree with me. And if you don't, I'm going to roll over you. Now, this is from a president who won 3 million less popular votes than the other, who's the most unpopular president at this point in a presidency ever, at 39%. In a country where the right direction, wrong track numbers, despite the economy, are still terrible. And yet he, consummate sales, confident salesman that he is, and a guy who likes authority and likes to exude authority, was doing that very, very successfully in that hall. He shored up his own. We talk about the base all the time. It's all about the base, not treble.
Not treble.
Not treble. I thought he played to the base much more than people thought he did.
Can I interrupt on
much
that?
Much more, please.
Because I was always under the impression that the base wants not just secure borders, but a guard with a gun every 5 feet. And here is Donald Trump saying, here is a path to citizenship. I thought that was not what his base
because
wanted.
Because a remarkable number of Republican/conservatives support that. On immigration,
they
support a path to citizenship for Dreamers.
So
right?
he's in line.
He threaded the needle, Howard Wright, talking about, but not the big, we don't want the big extended family. If you're here and immediate members of your family, we'll figure out a way from them, but not the 18
cousins,
et cetera.
It's much more qualified than it sounded. Plus, it's 12 years. I mean, it's...
I think Howard's onto something here about the salesmanship, because I know a lot of salespeople, and I'm always impressed at their ability to be somewhat delusional. They get turned down 18 times, but the 19th time they're going to make the sale, right?
Right.
And to stay in that business and to have that kind of attitude, you have to be somewhat delusional. He is somewhat delusional politically, and it works for him.
And there's a relentlessness. There's a relentlessness to Trump. And I've met him. I don't know him intimately, but I've been around him enough and been in rooms with him enough and been in his office enough to sense the relentlessness. He's not only has the quality of self-delusion that all great salesmen have, there's a relentlessness to him.
Yeah.
And he has determined that this track he went on to win the presidency the way he won it, in the Midwest states, mostly with white working people for the most part, he's doubling down. Last night he doubled down on that strategy and basically said, any minority people, any of you loose Democrats who want to come with me, come on, because I'm going to win it this way. And that's my sense of how he's doing. And for him to say, you know, on the one hand, he says, yes, we, you know, we'll accept these people who are here illegally. But Americans are dreamers, too. And that was a poke in the eye to the whole dreamer movement to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So words that I'm sure he in his mind feels are inclusive. Your sense is those words are exclusive.
Well, they're inclusive on his terms.
Right.
You know,
that's what I'm saying.
You can come here and salute. If you salute the flag, you can come here.
Right.
And
he'd love the new XFL.
Right. And of course,
we're not
love people.
Socialism.
Most immigrants who come here do salute the flag. You know, they love this country.
Yeah.
That's why they fought and sacrificed their families
here.
To get here.
Yeah, to get here.
But he's saying, okay, that's good. But I want you to. I want you to know up front that you're not kneeling. By the way, this overlaps with sports just a little bit. I don't know if you were still watching when he said, you know, we like to stand and salute the flag and sing the pledge, you know, and sing the Star-Spangled Banner.
Did you get a
sense? That was like right at the NFL, right there.
When you watch this, in the room, sometimes there's great hostility. There was hostility to Obama. Who is that one guy who stood up and called him a liar?
And
Joe Wilson.
How was it in the room?
And evidently, the word went out to the Democrats, don't do something stupid like
that.
You may sit on your hands. You may not applaud. You may look unhappy. Do not do that. Which,
did I hear like muttering in the background when somebody's saying, but nothing?
Muttering.
I think the Democrats, having been advised by Nancy Pelosi and I guess Chuck Schumer as well, to just cool it.
Yeah.
Right.
They looked like inert. I mean, they were like stunned. They sat there like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I would have preferred them just as a piece of political theater
to
do something dramatic.
Yeah.
Do something.
Take some selfies.
This guy's killing you up here. He's killing you up here. Do something dramatic.
My sense is you gave him, you let him get in the batter's box as a designated hitter, and he stood there and preened and took pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch, and you didn't get him out.
You know who hated the speech?
Is that fair?
The Twittersphere hated it because he stuck to the script. And
they wanted
with these veiled references that Howard accurately describes. Right? It was still pretty boring, just ticking through, ticking through, ticking through. The Twittersphere hated it. Then about halfway through, my daughter texts me from school, and she goes, "This is so painful. I cannot believe this is so painful!" Exclamation point! Exclamation point! And so I'm responding to her, and then I says, "Oh wait, your brother Colin is checking in. I'm thinking about the State of the Union. No, about the quarterback situation with the Redskins." Outraged, completely
That's
outraged.
Like Steve Sands.
There should be a fatwa against these people.
Yeah, I got lots of of tweets and so on. Like, you better just talk about the Redskins. I mean, you know, you know, the heck with this thing. Yeah. You know,
fantastic. It's fantastic. I mean, one of the things that I think is true. I'm not going to go on and on about this, but one of the things that I think is true with the internet, which is of course the greatest tool for good and for evil that we've ever seen. People have no attention spans.
No.
They have no, they can, because they don't have to sit in a room and talk to themselves, because they can type stuff out and talk to everybody in the world, they say, all right, enough of this. Nothing gets a full run.
Well, the way to understand this speech last night is that Trump was not really seeking to rivet the attention of the whole country. If he got it, fine. He went for an hour and a half, which put Joe Kennedy, you know, beyond the and the reply speech. Everybody was so, I think part of his strategy also was, everybody's going to be so exhausted when I'm done. Sure. They're not going to bother listening to Joe Kennedy.
Well,
but
nobody ever listens to
the I know. But I think he was speaking. I think
Reginald could have given the rebuttal and nobody
I think that speech was primarily designed for his base and for the commentariat in his base, where he's telling him, okay, here's how I'm going to deal with all these people who want me to be bipartisan.
All right.
This is how I'm going to handle it.
Why do they start so late at 9?
For the West Coast.
Yeah, the West Coast audience.
Well, we think they're working until 6 o'clock and we want them to get
by
off.
By the way, the first edition of the Washington Post, I'm holding up for all of you here on watching TV. The first edition of the Washington Post had call for bipartisanship.
Yeah.
And that's because Trump was spinning all day.
Right.
That
and they got slammed partisan. For it, by the way.
Yeah. And then they switched. You see the late edition.
Tough talk. Call
tough
for
talk
unity.
And call for unity.
So, yeah, doing Monday Night Football, I always said, can't we start earlier? can't we start earlier?
Like four.
I don't, you know, when they would say West Coast, and I would say, they chose to live there.
Yes.
Let's start early. Yes. Let's make this happen.
And I've worked out there. They stop working at 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, we're going to get out of here. You're going to do reads.
Yes,
I
yes,
can't
today.
Do reads, but I will do them next week.
I'm eager
when
to
we
ready.
Come back. Dan Miller of Detroit. We have not talked about Michigan State. We have not on this show. And people said, "Are you afraid of it?" I go, "No, not at all." We're going to talk to Dan Miller in Detroit about that. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, this is the Sherry's Berries read.
Oh, because of Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day is rapidly approaching.
Getting the flowers and everything.
Well,
back.
You know what? And I 1 year, I thought I had a great gift for that special
mutton.
Someone in my life. No, mutton usually does the trick.
Yeah, mutton's good.
I got her a baboon.
A baboon.
Yes, a service baboon. I thought this would be great. You can take them on the
baboon.
Couldn't get them on the plane, though.
No, and she was allergic to them, and they didn't
baboon.
Like each other, so that was really a bad idea. What you want to do is you want to get Sherry's Berries. That's right. A gift from Sherry's Berries is the perfect way to make a big impression this Valentine's Day. Go ahead and think inside the box. See what I did there?
That's good. Valentine's that was so good.
Day.
That was
Your
so
berries good. Will arrive in Sherry Berry's signature gift box with a beautiful ribbon, no gift wrap required. And right now, listeners of this fine podcast, The Tony Kornheiser Show, can send Sherry's Berries or any of the decadent gourmet gifts to the Valentine and save 20% on gifts over $29 with the promo code TKPOD. Now, I've had these strawberries year after year.
They're gigantic.
They are prehistorically large.
They are
fantastic, and everybody loves them. This is going to bring a big smile to that special person in your life. They're fresh,
covered
juicy,
with chocolate.
Yeah, milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolatey goodness, then topped with chocolate chips, chopped nuts, signature swizzles. It is fantastic. You can choose the delivery date, and it's guaranteed. Customer satisfaction is always number one, or your money back. So here's what you need to do. There's only one way to get 20% off an unforgettable gift over $29 from Sherry's Berries. Visit berries.com, that's berries.com today, and enter the code TKPOD at checkout. That's berries.com, code TKPOD.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's a pronunciation issue with this song, so Nigel's going to take it.
Yes, the name of this band is Nastepshi Tronau, and the name of this song is Vitamsky Jechi.
And why would we have stuff like that?
This was sent to us by Michael Zakalik, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
And his dad was in a band in Poland,
yes, in 1963. They were the...
Marcin Gortat loves them.
They were the Polish answer to the Beatles, I guess.
I guess they were.
Did they ever open up for you, Howard?
I opened for them, actually.
There you go.
In Warsaw, back when I was a hippie in a Volkswagen bus.
And I played this just in honor of Jaws, who, you know, which...
The Polish rifle.
Exactly.
Who's going to be on the sideline.
Yes, I'm very happy for him.
On Sunday. He's on the sideline.
We love Jaws, dear.
We do. Dan Miller and I worked together at WTEM many, many years ago. Dan left to go do anchoring work at the sports station, the Fox station in Detroit, WJBK, and he does the radio call of the Lions games and is intimately familiar with everything in the Michigan sports scene. And so I think it's a great idea to talk to Dan about what is going on with Michigan State right now. And I wonder, I guess the first question is, and I say this as somebody who works for ESPN, and so I know that, you know, I'm following the ESPN part of this story. Everybody knew about Larry Nassar. This was not unknown. He had pleaded guilty over a year ago to other charges. Everyone knew that there was going to be the sentencing hearing and there was the horrifying crimes that he committed. I didn't know about this other stuff at Michigan State. Dan, it seems to me that if you're on the campus of Michigan State, this now feels like an atomic bomb has hit that place. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're right. And it had already detonated with the Larry Nassar situation, which had put a cloud over the entire university. But I think when ESPN came out with their report, even the written report on Friday before the full TV report came out on Sunday, that the connection of the football program and the basketball program to something less than programs that had been completely transparent, I think caught people by surprise. We knew about a lot of the things that were talked about, the Payne and Appling situation and the rape charges that were never brought, the four football players who last summer were kicked off the team because of sexual abuse allegations. So we knew about some of those things. What we didn't know about was Mark Emmert in 2010 being sent a letter telling him about 37 cases of reported sexual abuse by athletes, that there may have been a failure to handle these things correctly, and that failure may move into the football and basketball programs, which, Tony, I don't think we're there yet. But I certainly think now, with all of these investigations going on, there is, certainly people looking around wondering what's next, and is this going to now collect the football and basketball coach, whereas 2 weeks ago that question would have never been asked.
So this is interesting because I didn't know anything about this report. I know we were sitting down to do PTI last Friday when we were handed a new lead story when we saw all of these things with Michigan State. I have since found out that Michigan State and ESPN had been fighting each other in court for a couple of years under freedom of information to get the ability to research these stories. So it's not, Dan, it's not like Michigan State didn't know. Like, they knew more than the rest of us knew. And I wonder, what is the reaction? I mean, we've seen this in Penn State. We've seen this in Baylor. We could see it at 50 other schools in the country. It is not isolated to those campuses. But what is the reaction of students at a campus where athletics seemed to be run by honorable people?
I think I can speak from a very close experience on that, Tony. I have three children, two of whom went there, one of whom is still there. And my son wrote something yesterday just basically saying how ashamed he is that people who were Spartans and talk about Spartan will and Spartan pride and the way things are done at Michigan State allowed some of these things, some of which we don't know the depth of, to get so out of control. And I think right now there's just a hunger for information, regardless of where it leads, by people that are affiliated with that university. And let me say this, there are also people, a large number of people, that say that what ESPN has brought up is just recycled news, a lot of which was known about, and some of that is true. But the question now becomes, what else is there? And was everything handled appropriately?
Right.
Did it go through the right channels? Or as ESPN is alleging, were there things that were just handled internally where the one case that ESPN put out there that a football player who was charged with a sexual crime was told to talk to his mother. I mean, if that is found out to be true,
They're
going to have problems on their hands because these things have a protocol that they're supposed to go through, and if those protocols were ignored, then I think you're going to see people, perhaps many people, that are going to be vulnerable here. And consider for a second, Tony, what has already happened at Michigan State. You had the gymnastics coach, Kathy Klages, who walked away 2 days after being suspended. You had the university president last week, Luana K. Simon, resign. The athletic director, Mark Hollis, retired. Those last two are in 1 week. Then shortly after that, Adrian Payne mentioned the report cut by the Orlando Magic. Travis Walton put on administrative leave by the Clippers. He was mentioned in the report as well. I mean, the fallout from this has already been significant. And to just think alone of losing a university president and an athletic director, one of the most celebrated athletic directors in all of college sports, is hugely significant. And further, let me say this, the optics on Mark Hollis walking away last week, from my view, are awful. Here is somebody who graduated from Michigan State, who was every bit around here as associated with Michigan State as Tom Izzo or Mark D'Antonio. And when this university needed him the absolute most, he decides to retire. And in his retirement speech says, I'm not running from anything. I'm running to
something.
That's
nonsense.
Boy, you are running from something.
Yeah, that's absolute nonsense.
When this university that you profess to love needs you the absolute most, you walked.
So what you're saying is exactly what happened at Penn State. And in fact, criminal charges were brought against the guy, Graham Spanier, I think his name was.
Graham Spanier.
And it's exactly what happened at Baylor. And by the way, the next school where this happens, and I think we all agree that you could, 50 of them, it could happen. It's going to happen there too. What you say to have children there, my reaction is, and I had this with Penn State, if I had a child of college age, I would say, don't go there. Don't go to Michigan State. I don't know that you're safe. And I wonder if that kind of reaction is true in state or if people at Michigan State say, no, that's not true at all, and we are being maligned here.
Let me say a couple things on that, Tony. Number one, this Payne Appling thing, look, they didn't get charged. But that happened before my daughter went to college, where they were accused of rape.
Yeah.
My first daughter. And I saw that. I read the police reports on it. I read the media accounts of it. And it never smelled right to me. It never felt right to me. And I told my daughter, and I told my both daughters, never, ever go anywhere alone with an athlete. And maybe that's a horrible thing to say, but based on what I had seen and some of the things that I had heard, I wanted them to be careful. And I think that you have people right now that are looking at this wondering whether or not their kids are safe. You had a trustee the other day in a meeting of the Board of Trustees nearly in tears talking about the fact that he has a daughter at the school right now. This is the Board of Trustees. They're under fire too, by the way. This is the Board of Trustees. You had one nearly in tears saying, I want my daughter to be safe. I have another daughter who wants to come to Michigan State. And this was Mitch Lyons, a former football player, nearly in tears saying, I need to know that it's safe here and it's our job to make it so. So, no, I don't think anybody is just looking at this and saying, this happened before or
right,
this isn't that big a deal. I think there is genuine concern about where they are right now with their student body and a problem and a culture which is seen to lead to this. Because don't forget, the overriding cloud through all of this is Larry Nassar.
Absolutely.
And the incredible string of negligence that led to him being able to abuse over 150 women, many with U.S. gymnastics, but he was an employee of the school. And the Detroit News did a story the other day that chronicled where 14 trainers, coaches, members of the athletic department, members of the school, but 14 people who are supposed to have the best interest of students and student-athletes at heart were told something's not right. He's doing something to me. And those 14 people, for the most part, did nothing.
So let me get to this.
That's what has us where we are today, yeah. To a point where two men, Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, and it's not just them, it's anybody in that athletic department with all these investigations going on, could find themselves vulnerable. And as I said a moment ago, Tony, nobody would have said that, you know, even 2 weeks ago.
So let me get to the Magic Johnson part of this. He's probably one of the most famous people to ever go to Michigan State, a beloved figure in Michigan and obviously afterwards. And he said anybody who knew has to be fired, and then said, you know, but I love Tom Izzo. You know, who Tom Izzo was an assistant to Judd Heathcote. Tom Izzo is born and raised in that area. Tom Izzo, and Dan, you know this, he is better liked than any great basketball coach in the country by people who he beats. Everybody likes this guy. It is so hard to believe that Tom Izzo would be caught in this and that it would be revealed that he's culpable as part, if not a cover-up, of just not doing the right thing. But 30 years ago, if you said that would have happened to Joe Paterno, people would have said, no, it's impossible. Not Joe Pa. Couldn't have happened. He's the best guy on earth. And so this is the hardest question. I mean, can you foresee the circumstances in which Tom Izzo is, they say, we're done. We're done with you. Even though I think I'm right that guy is as beloved in the state as anybody, right?
You are right, unless you went to Michigan.
But right,
you,
right.
You are right. And let me answer that by saying we're not there yet. There is no smoking gun where Tom Izzo or Mark D'Antonio at this point have an email where it says, guys, we need to make this go away, or guys, I need him on Sunday. We need to make this go
right.
away. So there's none of that yet, but I think you have to look at overall where we are. Number one, as I mentioned a moment ago, this entire campus is under the cloud of Larry Nassar. Everything is heightened. Izzo and D'Antonio, as I said, with an investigation going on right now, the Attorney General's put a special prosecutor on this. The NCAA is investigating. I know ESPN probably now is entrenched and not going anywhere. I heard one of the people that have worked on this story, one of the women that's worked on this story, I'm sorry, her name slips my mind, the other day, I think it's Paula Levine.
Paula Levine, yeah.
Yeah, she said that since this came out, others have called to tell them
sure.
about stories. So those are still things that are going to come out. But, Tony, think about that. Think about Nassar. Think about the investigations that are going on. And couple that with where we are right now, that everything that happens is going to be viewed as we look at these things now in 2018 through the Me Too movement, through the Time's Up movement, where victims' voices have never been louder. But the question at Michigan State is, were those victims' voices heard at all, or were they heard by people with a bias towards the alleged perpetrators? And that's what they have to get to the bottom of, because to your original question about Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, and again, I don't know where this is going. We'll wait and see, but I would say this. The level of infraction that it would take to bring about a forced resignation or a firing is much lower in my mind because of what MSU is going through with Nassar, because of where we are as a society in dealing with sexual crimes. And that is a big change
yeah.
from where we would be yeah. maybe a year ago. I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody. Just, you know, group Izzo and D'Antonio in with everybody in that athletic department and say this. It's going to be very difficult to separate anything that is found as an impropriety done by somebody from what's going on with Nassar. He's a monster, and what he did, certainly, I don't think you'll be able to compare to what else they find, but it's one campus, and right now it's one situation, and I don't think there's going to yeah. be much forgiving if they find out that people did not follow proper protocols to help people that were in trouble and victims or survivors of sexual crimes.
Thank you so much, Dan. I know this is obviously a hard personal story as well, but thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Dan Miller, boys and girls. We worked together at WTEM when it was WTEM 570. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll make the show more fun. We'll make the show more fun. We'll do news stories. We'll do the Comfort Peacock story. I know everybody wants to get on a plane and say, who's that next to you? Oh, that's my Comfort
State
Peacock.
The State of the Union is so much fun, Tony. Yeah,
we're moving into fun. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek read.
SeatGeek.
Yes. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find a perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. Fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. I have the SeatGeek app, and I've used it to buy tickets.
Fantastic.
Yes, to a concert.
I don't have any apps.
No, you
don't have any apps.
But you like appetizers.
I do. I have the one app on my phone that I do pay attention to is My Radar.
My radar.
I like to look and see when it's really bad weather.
Oh, sure.
And it's descending on me.
I thought it was like your radar where you are.
No, it's a Tony's weather. It's a weather thing. It's like death and destruction radar. I like it.
Well, SeatGeek is a fantastic app, and as I said, I've used it, and it really is great. I know Michael has used it. I know Saliza has used it. Gary has used it. Yeah, it's just fantastic. Yep. And it's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals, and to get you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. So here's what you need to do. Oh, and by the way, this is a great deal. Best of all, listeners to this great podcast.
They get 20% off.
$20 off.
$20
yes,
off.
Yes, yes. Listeners of the Tony Kornheiser should get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app into promo code TonySB today. That's promo code TonySB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And guess what else? SeatGeek, this is a great deal, is offering a special promotion on Super Bowl tickets to all SeatGeek purchases.
They're expensive.
Not just first-timers. So this is for anybody who's looking to get them. You have the SeatGeek app. Use promo code TonySB for $250 off.
Yeah, because these tickets, you're not getting these tickets for like $40.
Right. So it's $250 off promo-eligible Super Bowl tickets. So if you're on the fence, maybe this is the year you
this
finally
make it.
This
is what's going to topple you on one
side. Yes, make it to the big game with promo code TonySB for $250 off Super Bowl tickets.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Tell Shauna. It's by Rabbi Misha L. Ben-David, who is our house rabbi rock star.
Yes, he is.
He writes, I wanted to use the name Shauna in a song title. I sat down to write it, and this gloomy tale emerged. My co-worker, Shauna, loves the song, despite the tragic end of the title character, and sat with me as I played it on local radio.
He sounds like he started out as a camp counselor at one of the Jewish summer camps I went to.
Yeah, we probably went to the same camp.
Yeah, right.
If people like the rabbi or the Polish group want to send in their great music that you can hear in its entirety at the end of the podcast, how do they do it?
You can send us your songs at jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com. We love to hear from you. We've got all sorts of great songs, but we never get tired of hearing new ones. So please send us your stuff. And if you would like to do a podcast, we have a podcast studio. If you're in the area, or if you're going to be visiting D.C. and you'd like to use the studio, just reach out to us at This Show Stinks.
Now, we're going
to
charge you rent, but it's going to be a lot less than anybody else's rent.
Yes, yes.
A lot less.
Yes, and plus, you can have some fine food here at this restaurant.
Chatter.
Yes.
Okay, so you have news.
I do indeed, Mr.
So go ahead. Let's start with news. What is your news?
Well,
because we have sports news.
There is.
And we have regular news.
You know, as I
said. Let's get to the Comfort Peacock story.
Do you want to do that first?
Yeah, this is the best.
Can I do one? There's one story I need to lead with. This is a very packed day here in the news bench. And
the news bench.
If you two would stop talking about doing news and just do the news, we could get to
it. It's a big game tonight, Mr. Tony.
What is it?
Big game. Formerly Harper College, now Binghamton.
Who do we play? Who are we going to lose to?
The Catamounts.
We're going down. No, we can't. Vermont's really good.
Vermont is the Duke of that
league. Vermont's really good.
17-5. This is
where?
This is at the Byerly Court, though.
We're not. We can't beat them. I hope we beat them.
I think you.
They
beat...
took Kentucky to the buzzer this year. They're really good.
Yes.
Didn't Binghamton beat Colgate?
I think we did. I think we beat Colgate. Yeah. Lost to Cornell. Beat Colgate. I think.
So we have all heard about the service animals, you know, being on airplanes and things like this, and I guess Delta has now said, look, we're going to change the policy with this. You have to have really more verified actual need to have the animal on the plane with notes from vets and all this kind of thing.
But when you say the animal. 90% of the time, we're talking about dogs.
Yeah, it's dogs.
Ponies, ponies, but pigs.
Ponies?
Yeah, ponies.
Ponies
pigs.
On an airplane?
Miniature horses, yeah.
That's not made up?
It's not made up.
I've not heard that. Service animals?
But yes, yeah. People have put spiders and ferrets and pigs.
Anybody who would take comfort from a spider is a service animal.
Yeah, they shouldn't be flying.
They shouldn't be on the plane.
So now United Airlines had a situation where a woman showed up with her.
The peacock.
The emotional support peacock.
and not a small peacock.
No, and you've seen pictures
full grown.
Of it. Yeah, it's a big bloody peacock, right? And so apparently the woman had purchased a seat for it. She said, well, I've got a seat for it, so it's all fine. And you know, it was like, no, look, this is not gonna work.
This
all
is
right?
not a Monty Python sketch.
No, it's not.
So okay, but my opinion has changed when I found out that she bought the seat. When she bought the
seat... You think
that
actually matters?
I don't know. It did to me immediately.
I have a corpse that I'm flying with, and I bought it a seat, so that's okay.
Well.
No, that's just... And by the way, the woman had called them and said, hey, I want to do this. And they were like, well, you can't, so don't do it. And she just came, bought the seat, and said, force the issue.
I didn't know my husband was here. He's here for breakfast.
Yes, Brian's here.
But he's leaving.
Okay. I saw you waving
bye,
at
Brian.
Some handsome guy. I didn't know who that was.
I was originally thinking the same thing about, well, she bought the seat, so what? But, you know, I have some experience with peacocks, and they can be quite mean and quite nasty. I don't know what comfort someone is going to get from a peacock.
How do you have experience with peacocks?
Because they are used in some places as essentially watchdogs, as security peacocks.
Peacocks?
Yes.
Like where? Northern Virginia?
I think Nigel might be able to pull up some sound effects. They screech very, very loudly, and they're very territorial, so they become very protective of their space.
Oh.
Okay, but that goes. This particular peacock had a very long tail. And all I can think of, I swear to God, nothing bothers me more on a flight than, well, a lot of things bother me. You know, the cart's coming down the aisle, but people have their feet sticking out or they have their luggage sticking out and the cart gets slowed down and I don't get my drink. The peacock's tail would be dragging down the aisle of the plane.
If the peacock's tail, it sounds like a Netflix series.
Just out of curiosity.
Or a strip joint.
Where were you where they were using peacocks?
A farm.
Peacock farm.
A horse farm.
A horse farm. As protection?
Yeah.
In the United States of America?
So United told this woman, take a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way...
Did she get her money back?
In request to Tori, this is
Does he get frequent flyer points?
This is the sound of a peacock that I was able to pull up. Oh, hold on. I'm going to put that up. Hold on. There we go.
Do it live! I can write it and we'll do it live!
That is what a peacock in the wild sounds like.
By the way, so yesterday, we're doing PTI yesterday, and I have an IFB in my ear.
Right.
And suddenly, we're in the middle of like the second story of five, and I'm getting the live ABC news feed.
Ooh.
It's in my ear. It's unbelievably loud. And I'm looking at Wilbon. He is unperturbed, so I'm thinking it's not in his ear. And I'm when the camera's on Mike, I'm pointing to my ear. Nobody is helping me at all. And I don't want to bust.
From the booth?
I don't want to bust. I can't see the booth.
Right.
I'd literally take it out. I fling the thing out of my ear, and then about 3 minutes later, I put it back in, and the sound has gone away. And they said, that was great what you did. Were you angry? I said, I had the ABC News feed in my ear, and I didn't want to stop and retape because I thought we were doing pretty well.
That's happened to me on live cable television.
It's weird. So what they said from the booth later was, what you should have done is gone, stop the hammering! Stop the hammering!
That would have been brilliant. By the way, in this piece in the Post, they talk about various stories of animals.
How can
on
you
planes.
Have a comfort peacock? That's insane.
These are apparently things that happen. A duck wandering around the airplane, just loose,
wandering the aisles.
And a flight attendant who said that she was asked to administer oxygen to a dog that its owner claimed was having an anxiety attack mid-flight.
The dog was? The service dog? Yeah. Was having an anxiety attack?
So yes.
The dog needed a service human.
They do this all the time in movies about foreign countries where they show the airplanes.
goats
are walking down the aisle. It's always that way. Sure.
Maybe they could have, remember in the old days they had smoking and non-smoking sections in the plane?
Animals
Maybe
and
they could have an animal section.
be fine with that. Yeah. And could there be a young child section?
Yes.
Comfort animal.
Nothing but young
bubbles
children.
Around them.
Yeah, what exactly.
Mr. Tony, remember how you were wondering where those grenades went that you left at the Eastern Shore?
Yes, what is that?
Total of 38 grenades.
There's live grenades.
Yes.
What?
They said 9 of the 38 were actual live grenades. Yeah. 19 more contained fuses, but no explosives the last 10.
Did you guys see any grenades? I'm just asking for a friend. What do you mean?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Somebody was, looking through recycling stuff and collecting recycling stuff on the beach and found the 38 grenades.
Live grenades.
Hurlock, Maryland, and Dorchester County.
Yeah, okay.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's a good story.
Bad news for John Wall and the Washington Wizards. They get a win last night.
Yeah, they did. Wilbon had that. Wilbon said they would beat Oklahoma City after we talked about Wall on TV. And I said they have no chance. Wilbon was right.
Hadn't Oklahoma won like 8 games in a row coming into that? So that was a big win for them.
Wilbon had that.
But they lose John Wall for knee surgery.
6 to 8 weeks. Yeah, it's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad for them because they have, right now, they have John Wall and Bradley Beal and spare parts.
Yes.
And that's pretty much what they have.
Yes.
Kevin Love went out.
Fractured head also out.
These two are all-stars. Kevin Love and John Wall are all-stars.
6 to 8 weeks.
6 to 8 weeks.
Does this hurt the Cavaliers more than hurts the Wizards, or is it about the same sort of effect on both of them?
It hurts the Wizards more than hurts Cavaliers, because everybody on the Cavaliers hates Kevin Love, apparently.
Did you see this odd rebound thing with him in Isaiah Thomas the other day?
Yes.
Because they'd had it was very odd. He grabbed it and then handed it and like made a big show of like, here's the ball, and now you hate me.
It's very odd. Yes. He ought to be traded.
James Harden got 60 points in a triple-double, the first time anyone's ever gotten 60 a triple-double. So that was nice for him.
There's a lot of sports.
Yes.
But you want to get to the really...
Jason Worth?
No. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Jason Worth, I didn't know this. Chelsea Janes, who's on this show, Chelsea Janes wrote a story in the paper today. And I would never have thought, when you look at Jason Worth and the way he presents himself with the hair and the beard, and you know that he was in jail for 5 days
for
going 120 in Virginia or something like that.
Right.
One of the greatest lines ever. Do you remember what he said afterwards?
No.
He acknowledged he had done it, and he goes, the lesson is you just got to know what the local laws are. Where do you get to drive 120 miles an hour?
The Audubon? Yeah.
So, I never would have thought this. It turns out he's an organic farmer in Illinois.
Know this, given your job.
I didn't know.
I knew this.
Did you?
Yes, because some time
ago. He was at the State of the Union.
Some time ago, he got big into very healthy eating, right? No, not quite vegan.
Does he look healthy to you?
Yes, very much so.
Oh, not to me.
You get past the hair and the beard.
He doesn't actually look that healthy to me.
Very fit.
Yeah, it says in 2009, just before he came to Washington, he changed his whole eating lifestyle, dropped gluten and dairy from his diet, decided to stay away from non-organic foods whenever possible. So, and he decided to buy some land. And he wouldn't say exactly how many acres he owns, but in the piece.
He's a lot. He's got a lot.
It's around 500, is what he thinks.
He's got a lot of land.
So, yeah, it's a big deal. And I guess he's testified up on the Hill about some of the difficulties that one can encounter when one wants to be an organic farmer.
Gave a speech at one of the big organic farming trade association events.
Yeah.
Does he need a peacock?
To protect the land to get out on the exterior?
Yeah. We could all use a peacock.
Yeah, yes.
I think that goes without saying.
But it makes me think, him being at the State of the Union, it's like, remember, in 1,000 years ago, the White House Correspondence Center was the White House Correspondence Center.
Right.
And then Mike Kelly, God bless him, brought, who did he bring? Fawn
Hall
and Don Rice.
Fawn
and then it turns into a big celebrity thing, right? The State of the Union is starting to turn into this caricature of itself, in which is, who are the people in the box?
Next year, the
box. Yes, the box has taken over the speech.
Yeah.
I didn't see. Was Stormy Daniels invited?
Was she there?
She was on Jimmy Kimmel after.
And was she good? You couldn't have stayed up.
I didn't.
I saw some of it.
I should have.
Yeah.
It was her. I missed her and the moon.
Well, she released a statement just before the State of the Union. It was like, I didn't have a part. I didn't do anything, and all of this is fake, and none of it's true, And then was on Kimmel and just dodged every single question.
Wait, what? She said all of it is fake?
Yeah, she's like, that's, she's like,
she didn't get any money?
She said, I'll try and find.
See, my overall sense of that whole affair is that I believed it happened, but I did not believe a single word she said about it. I thought that overall it probably happened, but the details I didn't believe. Now she's denying all of it?
She says the fact of the matter is that
good career move for her then.
Each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 11, 16, 17, and now again in 2017. I'm not denying the affair because I was paid hush money, as been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I'm denying this affair because it never happened. I will have no further comment on this matter.
Well, there were plenty of contemporaneous accounts, as they say.
Yeah, and maybe yes. It's a definition
of what she
of a
said.
Player.
Yes.
She was paid the money, and she doesn't want to talk about the money. You know, she was interested in political office. Do you know that?
God bless her.
Yeah, she ran for the Senate.
She wanted to run for the—I think she may have actually tried to run for the Senate.
Yes.
In Louisiana, the
yes.
only place that you could—
oh, sure.
Stormy could run—
oh, sure, sure, sure.
—happens to be her home state of Louisiana.
It's good.
There, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, David Vanner was involved.
Yeah, I once asked Governor Edwards, who at the time, Double Eddie, when the Gary Hart thing was going on, I said— Governor, what do you think about the Gary Hart, you know, the Donna Rice affair?
Yeah, monkey business.
Yeah, and he said, I don't know, I've never seen the girl.
Fabulous.
That's Louisiana.
Yeah, did you want to comment on a landline? Did you want to get into that?
I'm going to get into that in old guy. Okay. We have a lot of things to talk about.
Yes.
We have the moon, we have deer, we have landline, and I will talk about Kirk Cousins and Alex
yes.
Smith, if somebody reminds me.
Yes.
All right, so we will do, well, that's coming up next. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Neil Young. Why are we playing Neil Young?
Because on this date in 1963, well, a very young...
By the way, Neil Young, just in terms of critical commentary, this is the quintessential Neil Young song for sounding like eight cats on a skillet.
Yes, it is. But on this date, 1963, Neil Young, at age 17, played his first show performing in a country club in Winnipeg. And again, I would ask Howard, mm-hmm. were you involved in that concert in any way?
Well, we turned down that gig, as a matter of fact. So
that's
opening the way for Neil Young.
What do you think a country club in Winnipeg is like?
Cold, yeah. I would think.
So, beer.
Here's yeah. my sense of Neil Young. And I don't hate Neil Young. I've never... The bands Neil Young was in, okay? He was in Buffalo Springfield, which I loved. He was in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and then Young, which I loved. But Neil Young on his own does nothing for me. I never...
I think he's a good songwriter, and he obviously knows how to sing harmony.
Yeah.
That's one reason why.
His dad was
so
a
good.
Hockey writer.
Yeah, that's
a
right.
A significant hockey
yeah,
writer
right.
in Canada.
Yeah, and he's a prolific songwriter. I mean, he
yeah.
just
yeah.
writes
he's a great
and writes.
You know, I wish him all the best.
Right.
I never...
I have a good story about this song, After the Gold Rush, which is the title
of the album.
Yes. It was covered many, many
yes.
times. And I did not know this, including by Dolly Parton.
Out of a dream, all in a dream.
She said, Dolly Parton said about
has
making
begun.
making that sounds like Cats.
No, it sounds like Cats, and it also sounds like Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
yeah.
But Dolly Parton commented at the making of her version of the song when we were doing the Tree album with Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris.
Oh.
She said she asked the two of them what the song meant, and they said, "Well, we don't know." So Dolly said, "We called Neil Young, and he said, I don't know." What do you mean you don't know? What does it mean? He says, hell, I don't know. I just wrote it. It depends on what I was taking at the time.
There you go.
I guess every verse has something different I take.
Yeah,
that is so
that's
often
true of
the case.
That's true of the many periods, musical periods of the classics. It depended on what we were taking
do
at
you,
the time.
Do you still have, Howard, do you still have any landlines in your houses?
Yes.
Tori, do you have landlines?
Yes,
one.
Okay. Nigel, you have a landline?
No, I do not.
I got out of the landline yesterday, not here, not in D.C., in Delaware. I had, and I don't even want to mention the company, and I have no complaint with the company, but we had a landline in Delaware, a landline that we paid $60 a month for. So that's $720 over the course of a year. I maybe made 30 phone calls on that thing, and the overwhelming majority of phone calls that I made were considered long-distance calls for which I had to pay an additional toll, even as far as from Rehoboth Beach to Lewis, Delaware.
Oh, man.
And so I finally said, why do I have this phone? Why on earth do I have this phone? So we got rid of the phone, and now in Delaware, we are in the brave new world of only cell phones.
I think you're going to regret that.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me
because when the apocalypse hits, one of the first things that's going to go out is telecom, right? And think about, think if you're in, what is it called now, Capital One Arena? On a really big night, really crowded, and the cell phones don't work so well,
right.
One of the first things the bad guys are going to do is take out the telecom, right? And cell phones won't work so well. Landlines hold up better. So you'll need to, you'll want to be able to make that one phone call.
But
I'm headed to 270.
So infrequently using this phone.
Okay.
Like it was like,
right,
it
well,
was almost
you're
like
you're only
going to
need it once when that missile
$10
comes in, honey.
A call.
This is just the Rehoboth, so he still has the landline here.
Oh, no, I have
DC.
It here.
Okay.
Oh, no, I didn't stop the D.C. No, I've never stopped the D.C.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I think we're of the era and the age where it doesn't seem like a home unless it has a landline.
My children have no landlines.
For us, it's like, hey, what is a home if not a landline?
Yeah.
Do your children have?
No, my kids don't. They're never going to have a landline.
No, my husband and I have said, the only two people who use our landline at home are my father and his mother. And when they both die, gone.
I cut that cord,
right?
That small cord. This is something for Tori because maybe she's had this experience. I go out this morning. I'm out with Chessie at about 5:30. Again, I must explain this. I live on a street. I don't live in the woods. I live on a street with 30 other houses.
Yes, you do.
Surrounded by streets with 30 other houses.
But you're not far from the woods. That is Rock Creek Park.
I'm 2/3 of a mile from Rock Creek Park. Half a mile from Rock Creek Park.
Short walk through.
Okay, okay. I'm out there, and suddenly Chessie, like, stands still. I look around. I don't see any dogs. This is usually what she does with dogs.
Right.
She wants to get the scent of the dog. And then I hear something, and it's a deer. And then I look across the there are a total of 4 deer.
Yeah, it's a gang.
The 4 deer within 30 yards of me. 4 deer. Again, I cannot stress this enough. I live in the capital of the United States of America on a real street, and there are 4 deer, and now a dog, some dog is just running, some dopey jogger doesn't have her dog on a leash, and the dog is taking off, and now the deer take off.
Right.
There's 4, they go flying across the street.
Stampede.
And jump over, a bunch of, and then they're going, they're out of here, they're bats out of hell. And there's 4 of them. How can this be?
So today is what, Wednesday?
Yes, Wednesday the 31st.
I'm out at about 5:45 walking our dogs, now 3. By the way, 2 dogs is 2 dogs, 3 dogs is a herd. There's a whole new level of planning, getting them dressed in the morning. So we're walking down 3 blocks from here.
Getting them dressed.
Well, one.
Well, you don't actually put those.
OV, formerly known as Keith Richards, needs a couple coats because he doesn't have much
formal
hair.
Wear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He came as Keith Richards,
and now he changed his name. Gets him as DePandy at that DePansy shop.
So we're walking down the street. It's pitch black. And 3 blocks from here, from Chatter. And then the little one, Ovi, starts to shriek. And then Boo, the lab, alerts and just full of muscles. And she starts howling.
Yeah, yeah.
The corgi doesn't
know what to do. Jesse's ready to go.
I look over to the next door neighbor's yard, and 2 huge deer just standing there and looking at me like, what are you looking at?
Yeah,
right. And then the dog starts snapping and growling.
I'm walking here.
The deer actually started walking toward us.
Of course they did.
Oh, no, no.
And that's when I screamed and said, come on, guys, we got to go, and drag them down the street.
So you live nearby here?
Yes, 3 blocks
from here. Well, I live like a few blocks in the other direction, and we are...
Your deer?
Yes, we're.
I haven't seen deer in my neighborhood
My neighbor Adam is here. Do you see deer? We see all kinds of things, right? All kinds of stuff.
Now, you know what you need to
do? I haven't seen them in months.
Yeah.
When springtime is upon us, the female deer have babies, you do actually have to be quite careful because they'll be very protective.
They had them in the little house. In the lot. Had the baby.
We are not very far here. We're hundreds of yards, maybe a half a mile or whatever, from Rock Creek Park for people who are not from Washington.
It's Central Park.
It's a gigantic park.
Yeah.
It's a little piece of the foothills of Appalachia right here, and there are hundreds of deer in there.
I understand, I hadn't seen them for months. I thought they took a break. I thought they hibernated.
They go to Florida?
I thought they hibernated. I thought deer hibernated.
They're hungry. They're hungry, is why they're around.
That's bears hibernate, but I don't think.
What do deers do?
They just
I haven't seen them in a long time. 4. And they can run.
Now, when you saw
they
them.
They can run.
Were they snapping in unison?
No.
The Sharks and the Jets?
Saw that, so that was really good. All right, let me get to the moon, because the moon is important. I mean, this was once in 285 years. So nobody here is going to see this again.
Right.
Once in 285 years, you get this. You get the super moon, the super blue moon that turns blood red. We've all seen pictures of it. And so I went out, I had heard that around 6:30 in the east would be the most effect of the color. Now, in my house, the moon is setting at that period of time. And I got to 6:30 where I could still see the moon. At 6:40, I could no longer see the moon from my house. At 6:30... all it was at my house, and it was this way last night as well, it was bright, it was full, it was bone white. You could see all the craters and all of that. And around it, in the aura around it, and perhaps I'm just deluding myself into believing this, there seemed to be a golden tint to it, but there was no red on the moon, none whatsoever. Did you see?
Well, no Tony, blood when on I was the moon. Late last night after the State of the Union, I made sure as I got out of the car to take a look at the moon, just to say that I could see it.
White?
It was white. It was
nothing special.
Nothing special. But I said I wanted to see it because Tony was talking about.
I did the exact same thing.
Tony was saying we're not going to see it for 280 years. We're not going to be around.
Apparently,
this
in the West Coast,
this has become some part of the theology of mortality of the chatter of the Tony Kornheiser show.
Did you go out this morning? With
the
dogs?
I did. I looked. It looked like a white moon.
That's all it looked like to me. So this comes from Mark Strickland in Memphis, Tennessee. As I woke up at five this morning to walk the dog Carlos, I turned to the west and was amazed by my view of the moon. I told Carlos, hey, I know that moon. I wonder if Mr. Tony is looking at the same moon right now. I realized that my enthusiasm for said moon might mean I was slowly turning into Mr. Tony. All I need is less hair and orange hue and an interest in a for-profit restaurant and bar. Anyway, thanks for the laughs and send me a box of that. I have read that only in the West Coast did you get the full effect of the blood moon, so I didn't see that. I didn't see any of it.
Well, that's why they started late, so the moon could pick up the West Coast audience.
I guess that's what it is, right. I guess. All right, big news locally, sports.
Yes.
Redskins trade for Alex Smith. I commend to anybody who can access it, Barry's Verlugas column in the Washington Post today. This means two things. One, it means that Kirk Cousins is gone and will be allowed to pursue free agency. And the second thing it means is that the Washington Redskins get a quality quarterback. Alex Smith's numbers are very, very comparable, if not a little bit better, than Kirk Cousins' numbers.
He had the best. Think he had the best numbers in the league last year.
For his ratio, he has been talked about as an MVP candidate in recent years. Kirk Cousins has never done that. His one loss record is far, far superior to Kirk Cousins, though he's played on a better team. And it's not just one guy. The big difference is that Alex Smith is 33 years old and will be 34 next season, and Kirk Cousins is 4 years younger than that. You're getting an older guy. You're paying him $71 million. Kirk Cousins would have walked through fire for $71 million and gleefully signed. You have the echo in your head of the former GM, Scott McLuhan, saying when he looks at Kirk Cousins, he says, I don't see special. That's a very damning quote, I don't see special. But honestly, to me, if you were rating the quarterbacks in the NFL, while I would have Alex Smith ahead of Kirk Cousins, I might have Kirk Cousins absolutely on the next line, right there. I think they're the same guy, more or less. Your thoughts?
I was saying to Nigel before the show, the only thing that saved me from falling asleep during the State of the Union was the Twittersphere exploding over this, and my in-house consultants losing their minds over this. So that was kind of a nice
You're getting an older guy.
I know nothing about sports, but I said the age difference to me seems huge in the NFL.
Except the quarterback.
When you heard Dan Miller talk about things have changed by the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement, Tom Brady at 40 being this good changes everybody's view of how old a quarterback can go and still be very effective.
Well, then that's foolish because he's one in a million.
Drew Brees is great, and I think 38 or 39 years old.
And Roethlisberger,
35 or 36.
Yeah, Roethlisberger's not a kid.
But my read of Barry's columns, I did make a point of reading this morning, was that their records are very, very close.
That's what I think. The one-loss records are far. Yeah.
Drew Brees 39 years old.
39 and a great quarterback. Yes. There is a sense with quarterbacks with the new rules.
With the rules,
that you can go longer.
Does it bother you that they have to give up a player for this as well?
Bothered Steve Sands.
Yes,
that bothers my in-house consultant.
Sands went insane. Sands went insane giving up a cornerback.
Yeah.
What Sands insane on this?
Yes.
You know, to me, they got a quality quarterback who, by the way, whose daughter worked in the Obama White House. Alex Smith, he's a pretty interesting guy himself, Alex Smith.
And he's a little bit more mobile than Kirk Cousins. He's better with his feet.
I don't know.
That seems to be what folks are saying.
I mean, I think Kirk Cousins can run a little bit. I think they're the same guy.
Did you see RG3's tweet?
No.
Oh, yes.
Was it mean?
Yeah. No. Nigel can pull it up.
It's something to the effect of
I'm available.
Somehow, some way, they will blame this on me.
That's okay. That's fair.
Funny,
actually,
that's
pretty funny.
Yeah. That's fair to say. Yeah. So, what do you like the trade? Do you like Smith?
I've never been a Cousins fan. I've always felt that he had an unbelievable knack of throwing the wrong pass at the wrong time. And his stats are good and so forth.
Stats are very good.
Yeah, but the stats ultimately don't mean that much. He never struck me as a real winner,
real Alex
powerful
Smith did not
leader
win much in the playoffs.
I know. Mean, no, I'm not. I'm not saying he's better.
And by the way,
I'm not
Kansas City makes this deal because they've got Pat Mahomes,
yes,
who can throw it 80 yards.
Right. Yeah.
Does it give you pause that once again Andy Reid is trading a quarterback to the Washington Redskins
as he traded Donovan McNabb?
Right. Yeah. Right. That's a good point.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I don't think it's transformative for the Redskins in any way. I really don't.
I think there's going to be some bad karma on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Cousins will win the Super Bowl?
I don't know much, but I don't think Kirk Cousins ever had much of an operation behind him, right? And he never had the full faith and confidence of management behind him.
You're absolutely right about that.
So I think despite all of those things, he did pretty darn well, and he seems like a really lovely guy, and his family seems lovely.
I think, Alec, you might feel the same way about Alex Smith.
We'll see. Does he have an organic farm? I like that.
No,
but does Kirk Cousins have an organic farm? Only Jason Wirth, to our knowledge, has an organic farm. We just found that out. I just found that out today.
Yeah.
We're done here.
Yes.
That was pretty good, though. We will come back with email and jingles.
Yes? Jingle from the incomparable Robert Berg.
Fantastic. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. Down at the Washington Zoo, I was looking for Reggie. I needed some quick cash, should I bet it on the Chiefs? I passed an ocelot, memorizing Sophocles. I reached the monkey house, this note scrawled with feces. Said I went up to Duluth, but I went ice fishing. So I told my friend, let's go check out Bay Bay and Ling Ling. But when we got to the yard, it was just grass and trees. Where are these bears? A workerman said, have you seen the furtive pandas? No. The furtive pandas? No. On the veranda? No. It's propaganda.
The incomparable Robert Berg, now in Lakewood, Colorado. Still incomparable at a higher elevation than in
Excellent.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh-style music.
Brilliant. Let me thank Dan Miller, the voice of the Detroit Lions, for coming on today. Let me thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and Sherry's Berries. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Okay. I'm late with this request, I'm sure, and I won't bore you with why I'm late, but I'll make this short. The man to whom I'm related by marriage, did I say that right, is having a birthday due to a teaching engagement, won't get to spend it at home with his family. He's a longtime Tony Kornheiser podcast listener and devotee all the way from here in Brazil. Shout out to Joel on his 40th birthday, which was yesterday.
Yes.
So we missed by a day, but
happy
we get
birthday,
the shout
Joel.
Out. Adam McCaslin in Mattoon, Illinois. As I was listening to you discuss Ronda Rousey's move to the WWE, I heard you describe her as the champion of the kickbox stuff. It displays like that of your high-level proficiency and mastery of the English language that shaped you into the doctor of humane letters you are today. From Leah Wagner and family, my name is Leah. I'm the daughter of longtime littles Joe and Deb Wagner from North Liberty, Iowa. Right now in seventh grade science, we are learning about the solar system and all about the Earth, Sun, and Moon and how they work together. And you seem pretty confused about it, so I'd like to give you some info. First of all, we know a day is 24 hours and a year is 365 days. One day is one rotation of the Earth. A rotation is when the Earth goes in a full cycle around its axis. One year is one revolution of the Earth. A revolution is when the Earth goes in a full circle around the Sun. While the Earth is spinning around and around the Moon, it's constantly in orbit around us, which means wherever we go, the Moon goes. The Moon is drawn to us, and we are drawn to the Sun by gravity. I was very impressed that you knew about the super blood moon occurring on Wednesday, January 31st. I hope this helps you understand. P.S. The last time I wrote, my Uncle Mike was mad that I didn't mention him. So hi to Mike. From Joe Farrell in Olney, Maryland, who keeps us honest. So a super blue moon doesn't actually turn blue. Next thing you'll tell me is next day blinds don't actually arrive the next day. And no, they don't. From Kevin Kosky, normally in Northeast, currently closer to Saskatoon. Quick update from Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, where I'm staying while covering the Super Bowl this week. Zero bathrobe situation at the Marriott, by the way.
That's tough.
Thanks to nearly complete darkness at 6:44 a.m., the moon appears almost completely eclipsed and has a red tone to it in the western sky. And, you know, I miss that. But that's further west.
Yes.
And north. That's further.
Yeah.
Brian in Memphis, but from Philly. Subaru drivers are always gumming up the drop-off half-circle at school. Their kid just can't get out when the momentum of the line stops. Their precious cargo has to wait until they are in front of the school where the teachers are there to open the door and help the kid down from the car. Anti-Subaru mail, always welcome here. Because we love our children more than you love your children.
Yeah, sure.
Because we have Subarus. Troy Stifler in Greenwood, Indiana. Heard you're getting complaints about telling the same old raccoon stories over and over, so I thought I'd give you some new ones. This one time at the Final Four, John Wooden comes out pushing his wife, Nell, in a wheelchair. And you know what? Junior tells the story so much better. Just have him on to tell it. Pretty sure he'll remember it. Jim Flynn, Cobra, Connecticut. I finally saw Darkest Hour. I thought the scene with Churchill meeting with the chimps in suits seemed contrived. Yeah. Tell Anne.
Strange credulity.
Andy in Cincinnati. Mr. Tony, I finally got to see I, Tonya, and I got to say I really enjoyed it. However, I do have a problem with one of the scenes. During the portrayal of Nancy Kerrigan's attack, I thought it was a bit tasteless to immediately cut to some bald orange man shouting, what a shot. Jason in Richmond, Indiana. Thanks for the many years of enjoyment. Here's a little story for you on my son's 9th birthday, which is Wednesday. 8-year-old, hey, Dad, that license plate is HR2772. Is that a good one? Wife, what is he talking about? Me pretending to ignore them. 8-year-old, CVS, Long John Silver's, Walgreens. Wife, this has something to do with that podcast, doesn't it? It would mean a lot to Anderson to get a shout-out on the show. So he did. Frank Curry in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. Dear Michael, thank you for your jury service. As a trial lawyer for over 32 years, I know your participation was essential and valuable. My clients and I depend on people like you. It can be slow, boring, tedious, and may seem to be a waste of your time. That said, our system of justice will not function without you. Thank you for your service. Next time, just say you know Abby.
Yes, lesson learned.
Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. It seems your cough has been lingering far too long. Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't want to lob reckless allegations, but is it possible that Michael has been secretly poisoning you in order to hasten your arrival at Ingleside before you blow through the rest of his inheritance by making questionable business decisions like buying a full-service for-profit restaurant? We're almost at the end. These are a little bit long. I'll get to them tomorrow. Yeah. I'll get to them tomorrow. If you're on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white. Play the cut.
Don't do it, Tony.
Thanks, everybody.
Yay.
Jest mój ojciec i moja matka, wietnamskie dzieci.
well, Shauna, that I happened by today. I pushed her paper under her door. Tell Shauna that the rain fell all night long, and that's why I walked up 7 floors. Tell Shauna that I brought some of her clothes. Sure, you can pass them. Tell Shauna that I've thought a lot about it, and I figured out where I went wrong. Tell Shauna that I understand she's mad, but there's nothing I can do. Tell Shauna that I'm living in a daze, and I miss her cozy suppers, her comments about people, her endless interruptions. Tell Shauna I was here. Tell Shauna that the ledge outside her window, well, that's just no place for conversation. But I'd listen if that's the only place she'd see me. I know there's no reasonable explanation. Tell Shauna, I see she wasn't playing a game. She could have called, but my phone, it never rang. Tell Shauna that my thoughtless introspection, well, it's ended with a bang. Tell Shauna that I called and told her mother, and we made all the arrangements yesterday. Tell Shauna that there's lots of people coming, and each and every one says they just don't understand. She was always so happy. She made fun of my resentment, impersonating Gracie Burr. Tell Shauna I was here. Tell Shauna I was here. Tell Shauna I was here.